Grade 5, Botany, Part 2. There's a wonderful economy of teaching available for us in Grade 5 because of the interrelationship of botany and geography. We can work in our studies of North American geography with the different forms of plants found. And fortunately, our continent, we take it all the way from Mexico to Greenland, is so incredibly full of every kind of plant imaginable, from the tropics to the tundra and from the depths to the heights. And we definitely want the children to experience the plant as part of the earth, in its intimate connection with the earth. Now, if you listen to the supplementary lectures I've included on Earth evolution, where I talk about the sun evolution and the movement from sun to moon. And there Steiner gives this incredible picture of these beings, these creations that were sentient, albeit on a very sleepy level, who were part of the sun. And when the sun separated out from the earth so that the earth could begin to evolve in a more independent way, these creatures long still for the light of the sun and turned towards it and flourished when it was available to them. And in darkness, they went into a very different state of being. He said that these were then really the ancestors of today's plants, with this connection to light. And in a way, the more evolved the plant, the more that light-filled connection is made manifest. So they are part of a greater whole. They are really part of the sphere of the earth. And for this reason, Steiner was very critical of bringing in plants in pots to demonstrate something to the children, or even putting seeds in little flats and growing them in the classroom. Now, certainly these are botanical practices, and biodynamic farmers have to start those seeds somewhere, and it's usually not going to be out in the earth if they're in a temperate climate. So of course the children will have seen this, and we hope at home that they have house plants and maybe that there are cut flowers on the table. So it's not to say that, you know, Steiner is saying blindfold the children when they are in the presence of such things, but rather that when we are presenting botany, when the children are being made especially aware and conscious of it, we want to do whatever possible to show them the plant as a part of the whole greater organism of the earth. And I don't think that anymore needs much explanation when, you know, one thinks of the depredations that humanity has been creating in the plant kingdom because of the misunderstanding of whether plants are needed in a part of the earth or not. And Steiner really pointed to the fact that plants are a kind of system of organs for the earth. Not only organs that, as it were, are pressed out of it, but that also convey, we might say, information, that convey energy, convey a kind of consciousness to the earth itself. Now, this is not something I would say directly to the children, but I think the way I present the plant, the way I draw the plant, the way I move on a nature walk around the plants and touch them or not, this should all convey to the children that there's more going on here than they can just see with their eyes, that they have to have a certain degree of sensitivity to it. And I would say that taking fourth graders out on such a walk, they'd be a little too wild and crazy to be able to really observe the plants in the same way they joyfully observe the moving and furry and warm-blooded animals, and to take sixth graders out on a walk to observe the plants, you're already going to see, A, they're more interested in one another than they are in anything having to do with the earth, and B, their ability to observe objectively is now getting challenged. That's why we need to bring in extreme measures like laboratory sciences. But for them to be careful observers of nature, that's pushing it a bit. So fifth grade, it's remarkable how open the children are to looking at this. So you want to teach them about the different plant growth in different parts of the world so that, you know, they can also identify terms like tundra and forest and desert and know what that means. And also that they can understand when you take a walk up a mountainside like Mount Haleakala on Maui, that you go from sea level and essentially tropical or semi-tropical growth all the way up to the top where you have alpine flowers growing there. And the tree growth is greatly stunted, becomes strong in the root, weak in the stem, and finally disappears almost completely. I've seen in 12,000 feet altitude in Colorado, a naturalist who was working up there when I was hiking showed me this little plant. It almost looked like it was, you know, almost going into a state of dormancy. Hardly any leaves, the thinnest little leaves. And he said, oh, that's actually a tree. What you're seeing there is a tree that at sea level can easily grow to be 40, 50 feet tall. So that's how extreme that is. So you want the children to be able to identify these growth areas. It will help them as our world becomes ever more politically charged about these parts of the earth and what role they play in the greater household. You also want the children to be familiar with what grows around them, with the local landscape, the names of the trees, the shrubs, the grasses that might grow wild there or might have been introduced in a so-called invasive way. That means that you have to know those names as well. This is really a way of stimulating our own interest in the way that perhaps local geography did for you in grade four, because you're probably not a native of the area in which you teach. So that really helped you touch base. It helped you incarnate a little bit there. And now with botany and walks in nature and getting to know what's around one, that is another step, not only in the children's incarnation, but in your connection with the area of the earth in which you live and with your interest. And in my discussions about self-development, later on in this conference, I talk about the cultivation of interest. We also are going to teach the children the names of some major plant types. Ferns, moss, lichen, fungus. We're not going to go into major scientific discussions of them, but as you'll see, we're going to be looking at them more as stages of a human life. So here again, another etheric quality. The etheric body belongs to time, to the progression of time in the living world. So everything that we see outside in space in the plant world is in a certain way, has a time signature as well. They should also be able to understand, you know, now in a somewhat conceptual way, what a root is, what a stem, what's a leaf, what's a flower, what is it really? And, you know, to show them different plants in which the flower and the leaf seem so similar, things like that, so that they can really make a distinction there. And to look at trees, take a special look at trees, which Steiner says are such an important part of the organism of the earth. So this would all be things, these would all be things that we want to bring to the children in one way or another. You may not get to all of it. The important thing is that they get a feeling for the general life of plants without having to take them apart, without having to rip them into pieces, but to appreciate the gesture of the plants, the wholeness of the plants. These are all very important aspects of it. We also want to bring to the children's attention the role of the insect world in the plant world and their intimate relationship, as Steiner and Goethe as well spoke about the butterfly as a liberated flower, the flower as a butterfly which has been grasped by the plant and not allowed to leave. So although you'll begin in autumn when the insect life is starting to decline greatly, but it is very important then in the spring to show the way in which the form of the insect is often, and here we go again with the etheric body, how the form of the insect is often the polar opposite of the form of the flower on which it feeds. We needn't go into evolution and adaptability and adaptation, but rather just to show it as a kind of form drawing exercise, as the shell fitting the kernel, or the envelope or the bag fitting that which goes within it. And you'll be amazed how children have not noticed this, how rarely parents bring such things to the children, to their attention to it. You know, one might assume kids know all kinds of things, but when it comes to the world of nature today, there's only so much that the Discovery Channel's going to teach them. There's only so much that a museum teaches. I'm a frequent visitor to the Museum of Natural History in New York City. Fantastic museum, you know, with some of the very greatest naturalists in the world have studied there and have helped to form that museum and its remarkable exhibits. And it's amazing things that are not shown there. You know, how the simplest aspects, such as metamorphosis, you look up and down the hallways with their zillions of plant specimens and models of those plants, large and small, and that's something you're not going to find. So don't assume that any concept, that any observation is too small or too minor to bring to the children. Now, what we did was to spend a fair amount of time working on three insects, the ant, the bee, and the butterfly, and I'll be talking more about those in a subsequent lecture. But it is good, you know, to show that, again, the plant doesn't just sort of sit there, but also relates in various ways to the world around it. And one thing the children probably will know because of the great deal of talk about the rainforest and planting trees, the relationship of human breathing to plant breathing, which is one of the greatest miracles, one of the most remarkable things, that the plant breathes in one way in the presence of light and in a completely different way in the presence of darkness. No one asks why, really. And yet we can see from what Steiner tells us about sun evolution, this really takes us way back to the earliest stages of the Earth's development to get a handle on that and understand it. And though I would not go into any chemical formulas, it certainly is important to speak to the children about that other miracle, photosynthesis, about the remarkable way in which plants create substance out of nothing, as it were, the plant as a chemist. And of course, we'll be looking at this again, fifth graders, when we get into seventh and particularly eighth grade, and we look at plants in a very different way as chemists. All right, now we'll go on to some of these specific ways in which we can work with these many concepts and ideas and see what you want to squeeze into these two very full blocks in grade 5.